Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my co-host, my friend Parker Fleming. Parker, how's it going, bud?
Man, it's going all right. Daylight savings time, always kind of a kick in the pants, but It is still light outside right now. So that's kind of a nice change of pace that it's not dark and cold early. And I work Monday to Friday now. So I'm like, I'm waiting on the weekend, you know. This is kind of how things go. Yeah.
You're 35 years old and finally an adult. That's really cool for you.
Dude, it took me long enough, you know, it really did.
I have a take. Yeah, I just realized.
Please go ahead.
No, please let me unload this. I like daylight savings time because I can play golf in the evenings, but if I'm not playing golf, I kind of like it to be dark early. You know what I mean?
I could go to bed right now. But I won't because it's light outside. Yeah. And like, especially in the summer, you know, we get light forever. So, It's like 10:30 and you're like, look, I cannot possibly have another porch beer. I have to go to sleep. I guess I'm going to tape a garbage bag over the window.
You're in Yellowknife, Canada. You're very far north. So that makes sense.
I can't comment on that. But before I go to bed, I high five a polar bear by the light of the northern lights, and then go to sleep. Off season, just hanging out, man. Here's what I was thinking about the other day, which is just absolutely absurd. Okay, the only thing we do well on this podcast is the team previews, right? Grant, there are 14 freaking teams this year. We're gonna start in the middle of May, and that's if we don't miss an episode at all over the summer, which is definitely not going to happen.
No.
So I don't even know, dude. We're going to have to do so. Like, I just started looking at like the things I have to do in the next 3 months, and I was like, oh shoot, we're going to have to do our homework on all of these teams sooner than you think. Football's a little bit closer every day, some say.
You and I are going to get so tired of each other. It's legitimately 14. I'm worried. 14.
So many teams. We'll find the this is so dumb and I shouldn't even say this out loud, but this here I am. Have you seen that that PETA billboard that's like a chicken,
the line,
and a pig, and a horse, and it's like, where's the line, and someone draws it right there. That's gonna be us this summer, of like, where's the line where we're just done. You're gonna be able to draw a line in the podcast and be like, they're super excited for the first 8 previews, and then nope, no more. Just get
and
it
then
out.
We hit Houston and we're like, you know what, I quit, I'm done, I'm
we're
out.
Gonna do Kansas first, non-negotiable, and then we're just gonna do some kind of like randomization to figure out what we do next.
It's, if you make me talk about the UCF Knights for more than 30 minutes tomorrow, I'm going to do something drastic. I can tell you.
Okay. That. Here's the thing that we have to do though, is we also can't do hating ass UCF. Like, we have to talk ourselves into UCF too. So the suspension of disbelief is going to be, I know, tough as well.
That's what we talked about in our last episode with Ryan Nanny. If you didn't listen to that, listener, go check out that episode because it was fantastic. Ryan's awesome. We had to like actually cover UCF seriously, like without doing bits.
Like, it's like we have to go up to the guy in the wizard costume on the courthouse that has the sign that says, we demand to be taken seriously, and take him seriously. That's what that feels like. Oh my gosh.
It's terrifying. Parker, do you have any, we have one and one and only topic for tonight. Do you have any shout outs? I'm going to give you carte blanche to give a shout out if you have any before we get into our topic.
Shout out to Noah Kahan and the song of the summer, Stick Season. You heard that song?
I have not heard Stick Season.
Oh, great. It's a banger. It's a song of the summer. It's so catchy.
Okay.
Shout out to college basketball. Shout out to the XFL, getting a little competitive here down the stretch.
Yeah, shout out my Roughnecks.
I don't know. Were you leading? Were you leading me somewhere? I don't know.
I was giving you an opportunity.
I like the shout outs. We should say what the show's about earlier next time. We should always remember.
We should.
To do
we
that,
should. We'll no, no. I like keeping the audience in suspense. Shout out Tom Hoagie. TC golfer shot 62 at the Player Championship and didn't win, but hell of a Saturday. Tommy Tables, Charlie, hope you're listening. Tom Hoagie whips ass. Hell of a round. So,
Indeed, that's awesome. official golfer of the Purple Theory podcast. Yes. Unofficial, but he could be official.
Yeah, yeah.
Grant, can you, for a moron, can you contextualize 62? Like, is that like a
36? It's really freaking good. I think it was a 62. It might have been a 63. It's really daggum good. It's basically, I would say he was like four standard deviations better than the average golfer.
Damn. Okay. So that is amazing. Yeah.
It was. So he set a new course record on a course that the best players in the world have played for the last 41 years.
Dude,
every weekend. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. I'm Googling mean and standard deviation of PGA scores. Okay. So PGA Tour last year, golf scores were normally distributed around 74.
Okay.
This is from Chegg. I don't know that.
No, I like this. This is good.
No. Data Golf. We're going to Data Golf. Okay.
Yeah. Data Golf's your source. Data Golf rules. Shout out Justin Ray.
74.
You have to remember it's course adjusted.
With a 2.75. This is super interesting. This is not what I want, but it's something else. Okay. So we'll say 74 for standard deviation. Yes. That's so 70, 62 to 74 is 12. That's three. Like, yeah, that's incredible. Yeah,
it's a course record on that course. And anyway. Hell of a round. Well, shout out Tom Hoby. Check our rules. Hoby makes the Ryder Cup team. Parker, why are we here today?
Matter at hand. Okay, so we talked about our previews. And today we're going to do a little bit of off-season content. We're not going to focus on recruiting. We're not going to focus on rumors, whatever. Again, we're covering the entire Big 12 starting this season. And we thought it would be very fun to, as an exercise that hopefully you as the listener can follow along, kind of rate and rank the teams a little more formally. So like what we've done in the past has been like, hey, Parker, what do your numbers say? And those are good. I like those. We're going to keep those. But what we're going to do is we're going to borrow a little bit from Vegas, and we're going to create unit by unit power ratings for each team. And then we'll update those in the season. But so what we're going to do now this year is, instead of saying, oh man, I like Kansas. Their running back room is good. Their quarterback's good. Worried about their wide receivers. We're going to say their quarterback is X amount of points. Their running backs are X amount of points. Their wide receivers are X amount of points. And all that's going to do, Grant, is just give us a heuristic to kind of put pen to paper and kind of compare what we're talking about. We'll add those up and we'll get team distributions. We'll get team power ratings. So that's going to be really fun. Again, we're going to put those on Twitter. We'd really like for you guys to do your own. I think it's a good exercise. I've been doing it for the XFL and it is super fun to just kind of keep track, and it helps you watch football. And so that is something we're doing. Yes, please.
Where does Bob Stoops' team fall in the XFL?
Their offense is so bad because they keep playing Kyle Sloter.
That makes sense.
I have them as fifth by a significant margin. So it's like St. Louis, Houston, Seattle, DC, top four, and then 4-point jump, Arlington, San Antonio, 2-point jump, Vegas, Orlando sucks. Yeah.
Okay. Shout out my Roughnecks. But so that is kind of the criteria, which I'm taking this over from Parker, and I should not, because he is the mastermind behind this whole plan. Today, what we're doing is that we're going to break these teams down by their coaches. And Parker, I think you picked a number. I think you learned this from, so you can give him a shout out. It's a 15%, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what we're going to say is, and again, all this is not like gospel. We're not giving betting advice. All we're doing is an applied exercise in figuring out kind of how we rate and rank the teams and putting pen to paper on those. Ours might be wrong. You should make your own and we can argue about them. That's great.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to borrow a method from my friend Kyle Hunter, who's on the BetUS college football show with me and Gary. And Kyle is like handicapper of the decade, like one of the smartest Vegas guys I know. And what he does is basically assigns out of 100 different percent influence to each unit. And he uses typically 15 for college football for coaches and special teams. It's kind of like a very traditional power rank. And so saying coaches and special teams are responsible for up to 15 points of benefit for a college football team. Okay. So what we're going to do today is rank all the Big 12 coaching staffs we're going to rank them and rate them, and we'll give them a score out of 15. And that'll kind of be the foundation for us to start building our power ratings. So we'll say, hey, we're going to talk about Baylor and talk about their turnover and say, I'm going to give them, you know, 11 points out of 15 or whatever, and then we'll compare the ranking as we kind of go.
Okay.
Am I explaining this well enough?
You are. And so I would add one more disclaimer, which is that there will be ties, I think. I think the ties are pretty much solely based on vibes isn't the right word, because vibes are a category for us.
First, I think we should talk about how we're ranking.
Yeah. So what categories did you use? Yeah.
Okay. So I know you and I talked about it some, and they're going to be slightly different, I think, ending. I kind of came up with like three.
Okay.
And then did vibes on top of that. So like I made the rankings and then adjusted up and down based on what I thought they should be afterwards. So again, very unscientific, very not typical of what I normally do. Again, we're just ranking them. And so I went first was recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Second was tactics. Third was likability / future. I just meant like their personality and how well suited I feel like they are to adapt to the future or changing landscape of college football.
Okay. I like that. I have similar. I took recruiting into consideration. Don't get me wrong. But I went tactics first. I went history second. So I know past is not predict the future necessarily, but I think you do have to take into account what they've done with the talent that they've had at the schools that they've been at. And this may change going into a different conference. If you're a new coach, whatever, I took it into account. You can think of a caveman. I don't give a shit. And we could say that now. And then I also had your third, which is future. And then my third was a future looking and yeah. So future
cool.
program.
Cool.
So those are my top three. So I think the way we should do this is we should start from the bottom. So I'm taking this from and giving kudos to the Trap Draw podcast, DJ Pi, Big Randy, and Timothy Simons from Veep, where they rank their Oscars nominees and just say, okay, here's our bottom. And we're gonna go from the top. If we overlap, that's fine. And we'll talk about them. We want to talk about them once, but we're going to say where we rank them. If that makes any sense.
So if you, I mean, I think our worst one is going to be the same. Maybe our worst two are going to be the same, but, so we're going to say like, if you said Cal had the worst coach in the Pac-12, but I had them ranked fourth. I don't even know who Cal's coach is right now.
That's fine. Yeah, yeah.
I think he got fired. I think they hired the Sac State guy. I lied. Gotcha. I do know who it is.
Hey, we hired TCU hired a Sac State guy too.
We did, but not his family. Didn't bring
his family. Not his family.
Let's just keep walking right past that. So if I had Cal fourth, but you had them 12th, we'll still talk about them.
We'll talk about them 12th, and you can say, and then I had them fourth. Yeah. So we've already
talked about them. And I'll tell you who my 12th is. So we'll talk about both of those.
We'll talk about them. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's go. So
I think the podcast would be worse if we called each other and talked about this for like 15 minutes on Monday. I'm okay doing this live.
Yeah. Yeah. To let it roll. So I'm worried that I've screwed this up because I trust your opinions, but give me your number 14.
Okay, worst is Cincinnati and Scott Satterfield.
Okay, I had him at 13. I had him at 13.
I have ranked 7 out of 15 possible points.
Oh, okay. Okay. Talk me through it.
Okay, I do not think Satterfield is a very... going through my categories, I do not think he's very likable. You can look at some of the turnover and, the constant flirting with other jobs at Louisville and kind of the never really actually investing in it.
Please fire me. I am begging you. Yes.
Yeah. Being voluntold to take a, parallel, if not a step down job. And he hired Brad Glenn as his OC, who was coaching Virginia Tech's offense last year, which if you know anything about college football, does not exactly inspire in the hearts of men. Two, pretty conservative in terms of like going for it on fourth down at Cincinnati. Their offense, I think, was at Louisville. Their offense, I think, was super uninspired for having Malik Cunningham, who's super freaking cool. And they really couldn't do anything if he couldn't just create out of thin air. So I don't like his tactics. And I don't think he's a good recruiter. They are currently not in the top 50 at Cincinnati. They are keeps getting worse. They're 80th in recruiting in between Florida Atlantic and App State. And, you know, there's still transfer windows and all that stuff, but they have a small class. But
one of Scott Satterfield's former places. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like rain on your wedding day, you know? So I think they're super poorly positioned for the future. I think this is a bad hire. I will eat crow if it is. That's fine, whatever. But I don't like this at all.
Satterfield. It is wild because he was very much begging Louisville to fire him, and he kept winning games against his will. Cincinnati, for being, I hate to use the term cradle of coaches because A, it's not true, and B, it's cheesy, but they've had some really good coaches come through the program. And people always use the term poach, right? Like LSU poached Brian Kelly from Notre Dame, or, you know, TCU poached Sonny Dykes from SMU. Scott Satterfield just moved to Cincinnati. Like, they didn't poach him.
If we're using the word poached, what Scott Satterfield did is the equivalent of like going and gluing an ivory horn back on a rhino.
Yeah, right. It's like, no. I'm like, nothing illegal happened here. There's no value that's been traded. It's a baffling decision. And I don't think Cincinnati's been such a good program, and what they did under Luke Fickell was awesome. They made the playoff. They were really cool. And I don't like the University of Cincinnati for basketball reasons. And even watching them under Fickell, I was like, this rules. Like, they're a great program. They're joining the Big 12 at the worst time with a lackluster head coach. And yeah, I'm
yeah, the only one of the four not retaining their head coaching staff. They're going to build some facilities, but yeah. So, and I think we talked a lot about that last night.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the rankings before you reveal you had them at 13th. So I guess you'll say your number.
Yeah.
Next.
So yeah.
How much do you consider turnover when it's like recent history, right? So like Cincinnati gets how much credit for having gone to the playoff and being pretty good the last couple of years? Doesn't have to be like an exact number.
I'm not trying to put a percentage amount on it. I think if they had maintained with a hire, if they had hired, you know, I don't have a name off the top of my head, but if they'd hired like a suitable replacement for Fickell, I would have been like, okay, like it may take a couple growing years but whatever, like they have established that they're a good program. By hiring Satterfield, like I think turnover plays a lot more.
Yeah,
it's what do we always say? Returning production is good only if the returning production is good. Turnover is bad only if the turnover is bad, and this was bad turnover. So you have Satterfield as a 7 out of 15.
Yes.
Okay.
Who is your 15th or 14th? Sorry,
Neil Brown.
Okay, that's I'm 13 there. So yeah.
Okay, so we just fought the bottom. Good. I was hoping I'd really screw this up. Yeah, Neil Brown. The bright spot of last year for West Virginia was Garrett Green flashing. And if that's your bright spot, you really have put yourself into a world of hurt. The hire of Graham Harrell of offensive coordinator was not as heralded as did not live up to the heraldry that it received. He's not going to be West Virginia's head coach in 2024. It's plain and simple. And so I put him last just because I think he's a lame duck.
So I want to couch this in like, is there a world where like, it's position as well. Like, I'm not like personally attacking Neil Brown for doing a bad job. I think it's good. Hey, here's how much value he's adding to his team based on, you know, the current circumstances. And it certainly seems that they had JT Daniels come in and some returning defense and just absolutely squandered it. And I'm surprised that he did not get fired this year.
Me too. And I've
heard that Rich Rod would like to come back.
Really? That would be
because
really fun.
Basically what happened is it's what always happens in college football. It's so stupid. It's like Jay Norvell leaving Nevada, because what happens is the coach says, hey, I need X to win. Sonny Dykes leaving SMU. He says, hey, I need X to win. School says, no, we can't do it. Coach leaves. School has to do it anyway to attract another coach to come yes. there at all. And they could. So this was over the course of the years. And obviously Rich Rodriguez has a complicated tapestry of head coaching experience, but sure. I do believe that they would welcome each other back.
100%. I've talked a lot with the boys over at the Voice of Motown podcast. And it very much seems clear that they would just rather move on. I think yeah. would be the best way to put it. They're also, it's not the recruiting great. They're 48th. They're not really hammering the transfer portal. They're 35th this class. Their best recruit is a 3-star linebacker. Shout out to that dude. I hope he does well, but also it's not like they're building for the future. I ranked him last because I think he's the quickest to leave. And
yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah. And like Satterfield might suck, but he'll be around. This is Neil Brown's last year.
That's totally fair. And they promoted Chad Scott to offensive coordinator. He like moved back to run game coordinator when Harrell came in, and now he's taking back over. So it's kind of like a reset. And like, here, like Letty Brown was a monster in the games that we won't talk about in 2019. But I don't. Yeah. So in terms of like what they've got going on tactics wise, they did go for it on fourth down, the third most out of anyone in the Big 12. The reason for that is because they were down a lot and trying to come back. Yes. So that's not, they don't get as many points for tactics there. Yeah, I would say the deal with these guys being so low is just they're uninspiring.
And if I had to put a point value, I'm trying to scale this a little bit. I would put Neil as a 3 and Scott as a 4. I believe Scott as a 7. I'm under 15.
Yeah.
I'm trying to scale this based on coaches.
And we're both learning how to do this too. I'm sure we'll adjust the levels as we go.
Listeners, this will shock you. We are playing this out on the fly. Speaking of which, if you can give me fourth down percentages for every coach, that'd be great. I should have told this beforehand, but I did not have the data.
I don't have percentages, but I have numbers.
Right. Yeah. That works. So Parker, it's your turn. Who is your 12th?
Okay, I have a tie, and I'm going to do the less popular one now. So I've got a log jam here. We're going to get into the middle class.
I kind of do too. I kind of have like a 12 to 8 log jam.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to start. I have Dana Holgorsen at 9.
Okay.
So, all right, so 9 points. Yeah, he's my
13th. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
You have Dana at 12th overall. Okay.
Yeah,
he is my 10th, I will tell you.
I'm probably a little too harsh on him and maybe waiting a little bit. The transition to back to the Big 12 and the turnover they've had on their staff, which is kind of unfair. But like if we're just talking about coaching staffs by extension a little bit, I like Doug Belk as a defensive coordinator, but he kind of feels like he blew his opportunity to go get a big time job, as evidenced by the fact that he's like not there,
that
you know,
he's
right
not
now.
At a big time job. Yeah.
So I think that people are still wanting to see more from him. He's got a good situation. I've got Holgorsen and Houston at 12 with a total of 9 points added, but again, it's tied. So it's, you know, whatever, technically 11th.
Yeah. Here's the deal about Dana. So 8-5 last year, 12-2 in 2021. Dana is extremely unpredictable, and I don't even mean that as a meme. I mean that you can't predict what his teams are going to do one year to the other. The peaks and valleys are extremely high.
Well, you can. It depends so much on the personnel and on the senior quarterback.
True.
I give him fewer points. It's like when it's on and they have Clayton Tune or they have Wild Bill Greer, they're awesome. But also, I think a lot of coaches could be awesome with a Wild Bill Greer, even if they could have made him into Wild Bill Greer. Even if you're still William Greer, but I think that's
fair.
Coincidence of good talent with him excelling and those peaks, I think, are what make me a little low on him.
Right. So I guess that's why I would put him higher. So, like I said, I have him 10th. because I think that he does have those peaks. I think there are coaches that have had more talent than Dana has and have done less. So there are, like, okay, again, peaks and valleys, but I think he can do more with less talent than some people that I have below him. We'll put it that way.
Okay.
But yes, so that's where I'm at with Dana. Is there anything else? I mean, listen, I'm glad Dana's back in the Big 12. Like, all jokes aside, this is really fun. I'm glad he's back.
Yeah. I think it's very fun. And I think he fits well and knows the conference well, and there's certainly an edge. They're 56th in recruiting, just behind Oklahoma State and Duke. But ahead of Rutgers in Wisconsin, for whatever that means. Also, they the numbers went away. They went for it 28 times on fourth down last year, which puts them in the top 20 of teams. And they were up a lot, so they were very aggressive. And so he gets some credit for tactics there, for sure.
Yeah. I'm just glad to have him back. So, like I said, I have him 10th. My 12th is Gus Malzahn.
Oh, we're going to diverge, I think.
Oh, yep. Where do you have him?
I have UCF. Hold on. So I got my ratings alphabetically, and then I'm like pulling them out.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So 1, 2, 3. I have him. Holy cow. I have him tied for fourth.
Jesus. Okay. No,
but this is good. But no, there's three tied for fourth, right? So he's sixth, you know, whatever. But I have him way higher. Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. I just reasonable people can disagree.
Well, the deal is the magnitudes, I don't think, for me are very big. If you're starting at Cincinnati and West Virginia being like 3 and 4 points, your magnitudes are going to be a lot bigger. That's what I'm
saying, is that my jump to Gus is that I have him at 7.
Yes. So, my distributions are much thinner. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I'm not a numbers guy, so that makes sense in that I don't know how to work this thing, but I have Gus at a 7. UCF is ranked 50th.
In your defense, I did definitely promise, like, hey, I'm going to get you a template or something, and I didn't do that. So. And
that's fine. It's all I also didn't do any work. No, I'm kidding. UCF, okay, 2023, overall ranked 55th. Their transfer ranked 68th. Last year, they were 9-4 under Gus. Gus obviously knows how to coach ball. We saw that at Auburn. I think Gus is not in the here's a question, Parker. Do you think Gus Malzahn wants another job after UCF?
Okay. All right. So you're bringing up the care factor.
Yeah. This goes into the vibes.
No, I think he's going to retire in Orlando. I think he's chilling. I think he's like, dude, everything I get now is land yap. This is low stress. The people down here are rabid for football. They have some money. And so I think the care factor is like a legitimate concern, but I come back to, he just looks happy down there, dude.
He looks extremely happy. And I like Gus Malzahn. If we were ranking this on coaches that I liked, he would be second or third probably. Behind Dana, who I really just more of a personal idol for me.
Okay. I do have a dark, I'm not going to bring him up till we talk about them. I do have a dark horse for, coach in the Big 12 that I would most like to get a beer with. It includes coordinators, but we'll talk about it. Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. I've Gus at 12. I don't think UCF is going to really compete this year. I think Gus is going to ride out his career. So like I said, he still knows ball. I have him at a 7, but he is my number 12 coach.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Likability, I have him very high. Tactics, yes. I have him middle of the road. Recruiting, I feel like through the portal, they're actually been pretty aggressive. And they're, I like their
65th for 24/7.
Yes, 24/7. But
68.
If you look at the, so here's the difference. I actually like On3's transfer portal rankings better.
Okay.
Because they're net.
Okay, I hate recruiting, so I don't.
Yeah, yeah. So if I can find where they are on that real time, they were a little higher at one point. Holy cow. Lots changed, man. They're 51st in net transfer portal.
Okay.
And so that's a little bit better. That's not as high as it was when I had this stuck in my head that they were in the top 20. But so I think Gus has a very clear sense of identity of his team. So yeah. he gets, you know, a good score for tactics, and the recruiting goes well for that. Cause he's like, I'm going to find the guy who can do that. I mean, all of their problems last year were when John Rhys Plumlee was hurt and Mikey Keene's just not the dude. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I probably rank my coaches based on what I think their top end could be. And at UCF, I don't know if Gus's top end would be higher than if they hired any of the other coaches in the Big 12 to coach UCF. Does that make sense? Like that's kind of what, does that make sense at all? Or do I need to say that again?
No. I don't want to like steal a bit and do something like Saban or, but
yeah, I'm but it's kind of Saban or
like Saban national titles or Gus Malzahn New Year's Six appearances.
Saban national titles. Easy. He's not going to make a New Year's Six.
That's close. I don't know. Yeah.
I will go with my 11.
Wait, only because I looked this up. UCF, sure. 30 fourth down attempts. So just above Houston.
Oh, yes.
A little more aggressive. Yeah. But again, game state matter. They played some close games last year.
Yeah. So. This is a tie with Gus. Steve Sarkisian.
Oh.
Parker, the vibes are so bad.
The vibes are not good.
Unbelievably bad. And listen, like I said, I really didn't take recruiting into mind, but Texas has the third best recruiting class coming into this year. A lot of that has to do with Arch Manning. Obviously, Quinn Ewers coming into the transfer portal. Steve Sarkisian has had so much talent at Texas and has done jack shit with it. It's amazing how poisonous that program is. It's not entirely his fault, but he is not the man to overcome it. No, absolutely not. He's 11th.
I liked the hire so much because I really thought he knew so much about offense. And like, you can say, okay, he's recruiting at an amazing level. When the offense was healthy, they were functioning super well. They weren't healthy. They missed out on important snaps for that. They had a flute game and let Donovan Smith run all over them and Bijan Robinson fumbled. Like, other than that, they would have been in the Big 12 championship last year.
Parker, the vibes are so bad.
The vibes are so bad that it does bring this down. That's fair. That is absolutely.
Where do you have them?
How many times are we going to say vibes? Okay. I'm doing that vamp for a second because I have so many ties that I'm now confused.
No. I know. And like I said, I have a four-way tie, I think, for 10th, nice. But I did rank them in the ties. So.
UCF.
And
then I have.
Did you rank them by school or coach? What the hell did you do?
Well, but I mean, yes.
Parker's hair for the listeners, by the way, it looks amazing. He's got an eclipse. It's a hell of a look. You should endorse
it. It's good for your roots, man. Okay. I have him at the, I have Texas tied with Gus Malzahn in that like second tier. I hate to call them like fourth or sixth or whatever, like they, but it's the three teams that are tied for fourth. Texas is there.
Okay. Well, so who's your 11th?
My 11th is Kalani Sitake from BYU. Okay.
Yes. I have him. I mean, go ahead, man. Yeah,
I have very particular reasoning for this. I have him at 10 points, which again, 10 out of 15 ain't bad, right? Literally 2 out of 3 ain't bad. but I think he was slow to make a change in defense, and their defense suffered, and they kind of blew the top of the development cycle this year.
Yeah, no, sure.
I think that he caught lightning in a bottle with Zach Wilson in a very, very, very weak schedule in the COVID year. And I think that actually the opposite of Sarkisian for me, like his likability and the recruiting infrastructure that he has with his connection to the type of lineman that they need, I think brings him way up and puts him above kind of those bottom three of Satterfield, Brown, Holgorsen. So I have him at 10 points again, kind of not quite a level up from Houston, but definitely a level up from West Virginia and Cincinnati. I think that BYU is going to try to continue to win the way they've won and hope that they can coach better and get a little bit better athlete development on the defensive side of the ball. But I mean, it's been a pattern where they've struggled there. And I think he has a pretty clear flaw.
Sure. I will say there are limitations at BYU, and obviously we know what all those are. I will say that his record at BYU for the last, 6 years, 9-4, 4-9, 7-6, 7-6, 11-1, 10-3.
Yep.
Guy can win. And, you know, BYU's recruiting class this year is 65th, 28th in the transfer portal. Again,
but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter because it's,
yeah.
I mean, like, we're not saying this in any way. It's BYU. Like, that's what they do. Yeah. I just think he's a good coach. So, like I said, I had him at 7th. Okay. I had him solidly middle of the pack, but he gets results.
Yeah.
And the vibes around Kalani are good. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
Who's your,
I need to start marking these off. Hold on. I got to mark these off. We did not do this well.
I'm marking it. It's okay.
Okay. I got Cincy. I got Houston. We talked about those.
My 10th was Dana.
Oh, frick. I messed up. Okay. Sorry.
How did you screw this up that quick? Okay. That's fine. What'd you do?
I have Satake at 10th, where you have...
Okay, so who's your 11th?
Gundy.
Ooh, that's our biggest disagreement.
Spicy. Extremely spicy. I understand.
That is our biggest disagreement.
Again, this is not a legacy award. He's on the same page as Holgorsen.
Right? I'm vehemently disagree, but that's fine.
I'm
going to
give
you
3 reasons.
Okay. 1,
the roster turnover. He is putting a lot of chips in being able to pull off a rebuild.
Stay with that. Go ahead.
2. I lost my train of thought. I hope you feel good about yourself. 2. Mike Gundy will get a first down on the opponent 20-yard line and kneel it 3 times to kick a field goal. I swear the man loves to kick a field goal. So he gets docked for tactics there. I think their offense has not been a good mix with, I think Casey Dunn has been getting better. I've said that and continue to say that, but I still think their offense is a poor mix of talent and execution. I don't know that they have what they want there, and they floated by with a really good defense. 2-3 years ago with a guy like Malcolm Rodriguez, we're like, you can't create a Malcolm Rodriguez. He just happens. And I don't know that the talent development's there. I don't know that he's future minded. And I think the turnovers, like, who the hell is going to start for them?
So here's the deal. I have a lot of problems with Mike Gundy personally. I have him at 2nd.
The future is now, old man.
Parker, Mike Gundy has won 7 games at Oklahoma State, or excuse me, 10 games at Oklahoma State 7 times since 2010. Yeah, you can't create a Malcolm Rodriguez. Do you know who finds them and regularly plugs them into his defense and his roster? Mike Gundy. Here's the deal.
I believe that is descriptive and in the past, man. I'm worried.
It was last year.
They have lost so much, and they looked so thin roster-wise. Injuries happen. They looked feckless. No, they gave up. I mean, they were hurt, but they also just, like, they didn't have guys to
punt,
out
reset
there
for next year. You hear, I somehow this has made me be pinned into defending Mike Gundy, which is something that I really never want to do. Mike Gundy's a damn good coach. I think he's the 2nd best coach in conference. I legitimately.
Mike Gundy has an amazing career, and if this was a legacy award, he would be at the top.
No, don't pin me into that. I'm not giving him a legacy. I think he has a couple.
That's
more
fine.
Years
we
in
can
him.
Disagree. I just think we're seeing the sundown.
Okay.
Of the all guy
right
here.
All right. That's fine.
Bonus point.
Yes.
Because I'm trying to keep track of new hires.
Yeah.
New defensive coordinator for Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State is Brian Nardo, the Nardo, if you will. Gannon University is where he most recently coached. Grant. Sure. For $200, can you name, without Gannon Googling, University. Gannon? Okay. Can you either tell me where Gannon University is or their mascot?
There's no way I can get the mascot. Pennsylvania.
It is in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah. Shout out to an old roommate of mine, actually, who's from Erie, Pennsylvania.
What's the mascot? Other,
small town. The Golden Knights.
Okay. I was going to guess gorillas, but okay. It was alliterative.
That's Pitt State.
I know that's Pittsburgh State, but what the hell?
I don't know a lot, but I definitely know there's not more than one school with the name gorillas.
Okay. So back on track. So we left off at 10th. For the record, I have Dana at a 7. I have Sark as a 7. I have Malzahn as a 7.
Like a little more credit.
Okay.
Because my lower end is actually way higher than yours.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely.
So
no,
unless you have Gundy at like a 15, we're talking about
Shades. I do not. Here, I do not. Yeah, we're talking about Shades of Gray. Yeah. So our 9, I think, is where we're leaving off. I have Joey McGuire.
Yeah, hold on.
I have him as a 7. I have him as the top of the 7s. I think the vibes are off the daggum charts. I like what he's building. I also think that he's made some really questionable decisions during games, and I am curious to see how quickly the, hey, I'm really just effing fired up to be in Lubbock spiel will last before it gets to the point where it's like, well, yeah, but also can you win games? So
the future potential is great, and they are going to get a spotlight this year. Although you recall, I'm pretty sure they were in the top 25 of FPI to start the season this year.
They were. Yeah. And he's Cruton. He's Cruton. I want to point that out. He is Cruton.
There's still a little bit Island of Misfit Toys. This is not the Texas Tech preview. Cut me off. We actually agree because I have a log jam from Sitaki to 7, and all of these coaches are ranked the same in total points added, but the reasoning is different. And I think throughout the season, this will be the most volatile group for me, this 10 through 7. So I have Sitaki, I have Joey McGuire 9th. I love the Zach Kittley hire. I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah. No, I do too.
I think that his fourth down prowess was overblown for two reasons. One, Texas Tech under Matt Wells went for it on fourth down a ton. Like that is something that this team just did a lot. And that's coming.
That's the one thing Matt Wells did correctly. Yeah.
Pretty sure the championship analytics subscription carried over year to year. So they're still doing the same stuff, which is great. Like, I'm not going to penalize for that. I'm just gonna be like, I don't know that he's innovating like that much.
You're telling me Kirby Hoka is ponying up the money for the subscription. Yeah.
I do love the narrative of what if the Matt Rhule rebuild was actually the Joey McGuire rebuild?
I'm very interested in that. Yeah, no, I know.
That warms the cockles of my heart. but I think that the other reason the fourth down doesn't and last year's success is a little bit worrisome to me is like they had 11 random guys playing offense and just played junk ball. And we're like, we don't know what to do. We don't know which quarterback works best.
Right.
We don't know what offense to run. Hey, why don't we put Donovan Smith in on 4th and 2? Awesome, dude. Like, that's great. That's going to work. But I mean, you saw when they played TCU, they ran 9 different run concepts on the first 2 drives. I think I charted.
Yep. And it was sick as hell for the record. Awesome. It was sick.
It was awesome, but it was entirely unsustainable. It was entirely beginner's luck. It was entirely the pitcher being seen the first time. They're going to have to put together an offense. I'm worried about their ability to do something besides Texas Tech. And they might be happy with this under Joey McGuire might turn into the, that was sick as hell. And we're going to beat Texas every other year team. I guess not with the Big 12, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think the ceiling on McGuire is pretty low, but the floor is pretty high.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I'm again, are we in the circle of trust? Are we in the nest? I say that as I'm speaking to listeners. I probably ranked him higher just because I think it's really funny that he can get in Texas's ass. And I know they're not going to be in the conference anymore, but they can be annoying as hell. And I think that they'll be spirited.
Beating Texas is a state of mind.
You're right. You're exactly right. So
vibes are high, but I do penalize him for that gas station ass truck.
Yeah.
The gas station truck stop hat he wears all the time.
It's not a great look. So you and I both have Joey at 9.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hey, look, we agree on something. 8. Give me yours.
Oh, sorry. So I have him at 10 points. What did you have him at?
7. He is the top of my 7s. Yeah.
Okay. Iowa State is
Matt Campbell. Hey, we agree again, baby.
Number 8. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Part of this is because hire a special teams coach, Matt.
Yeah.
Part of this is because, hey, it is looking increasingly likely that the COVID year was an outlier and you might not be the superstar that people make you out to be. I say that with no twinge of anything. I'm saying just revealed preferences. Matt Campbell is still there. Matt Campbell has underperformed 2 years in a row, despite having a ton, despite having the GOAT, Brock Purdy, playoff winner, Brock Purdy, and they went 7-6, right?
And a hell of a defense. I'm going to point that out. So many talented defensive players on that roster.
And and Heacock's great, and they continue to develop awesome defensive talent. The question remains, can they put it together under normal circumstances? Can they play normal football? Because what do they keep doing? They keep losing on random bullshit that is like special teams, which to me would suggest coaching issues. So I think he is, unlike McGuire, Campbell's ceiling is lower because he is shooting himself in the foot, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. And I have Campbell here, above guys like McGuire, Dana, Sark, because it really is hard to win games at Iowa State. And what Campbell has done with that program is extremely impressive. But as you said, that ceiling is getting lower and lower. And I think the vibes are really getting worse. They're not bad, but they're getting worse, as it's clear that he wants a better job. Parker, I don't know if you know this or not. Matt Campbell doesn't have an agent.
I can't comment on that.
Another way of shooting himself in the foot. But
Hunter Deckers threw for 3,000 yards last year.
I did not want Hunter Deckers to come up at all.
I will say it's very interesting to me. This is one of those, as so often happens. Iowa State loses Breece Hall, and then Iowa State cannot score touchdowns. Interesting.
Running backs very important. I have Matt Campbell. He is my lone 8. Out of 15.
And is also my Nate Steele, Shielhase, internal promo, which I fired. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to get his name, but guy who was there for a long time.
Yeah.
Felt like kind of rearranging deck chairs.
Tom Manning? Is Tom Manning still there?
Yeah, Tom Manning. Yeah, he's going back to the NFL. That's fine. Yeah. He'll be fine. So definitely some offensive stuff they've got to work out. They're going to play a good defense. Like, they're going to have a good defense, but I mean, they're not going to be able to stumble on talent like they have in the past.
No, I know. Yeah, they can't do that.
And they're not going to be able to win in the COVID year. Hopefully.
Hopefully there won't be another COVID. Not going to be another COVID year. God, please. Yeah. Jesus Christ. My 7th was Satake. He is one of 2 9s. He is the bottom of the 9th for me.
Okay, so interestingly enough, I have Satake at 10 points, even though I have him rated lower. So we kind of agree on his impact,
even if we don't
agree on his placement.
So who's your number 7?
My number 7 is the man, the myth, the legend, Lance Leipold. I think that he is very, very fun on offense and very, very creative, letting Andy Kotelnicki. I'm not going to say it correctly, and that's okay. I'm bad at names. I'm bad at all kinds of names. I think that their offense is very fun. They made do with Jason Bean, who's not a bad quarterback, but when Jalen Daniels was in there, that offense could score on anybody. Super, super fun. And Andy is actually the offensive coordinator with whom I would like to get a beer. I think he is the candidate for the most likable. If you haven't seen a recent picture of him, just search for his staff photo right now. And you're like, yeah, man, I'd throw darts with that guy. But the issues that I am worried about with Kansas and why he's this low, because I feel like 7 is low for the vibes that he gets.
I have him 3rd for the record.
Yeah. The reason I have him lower is because of uncertainty. Sure. So one, the defense last year was terrible. And the belief is that the defense will get better as they increase the depth in the 2-deep and they like have real people playing snaps, because they don't have real people playing all the snaps. This year they kind of did. They got, I won't say lucky, but the way their schedule sequenced worked out really, really well. I think they would have lost a couple games later in the season that they won early on. And that's great. And they played TCU really hard. That was really good. Depth was clearly an issue. The wheels kind of came off. I don't know how much they're going to be able to fix it. That's a very hard task for somebody like Leipold, who's not a good recruiter. I don't mean that he's a bad recruiter. I just mean that's not something that I'm saying like, oh, he's going to walk into a 5-star's house and say, a 5-star outside of the Kansas City area, you know, like not a hometown kid, and say, hey, come from Southern California to Kansas. I don't know the Leipold's wheelhouse. So the uncertainty of that ability to replicate it, and the uncertainty of, okay, we've got a year of tape on the offense with Jalen Daniels. Yep. How's that going to replicate? I think the uncertainty is what has me in him right there on the cusp of the middle of the pack.
Okay. Okay. I'm fine with that. I think what Leipold has done, and you and I have recorded many a minute talking about how impressive what he did at Kansas was last year with Jalen Daniels, with Jason Bean just adapting. I'm a third just for the vibes, and I think he has enough leeway in Lawrence to where he's going to have time to build the program. I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Well, and I think I saw, didn't he have, it came out this offseason, he has a clause that if they don't do a stadium renovation by year four or something, he can just walk and get his buyout.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's specific details, nightmare.
But yeah.
I think vibes are very high there. And if you're going for likability, you're going for future mindedness, and you're going for tactics, I think he's potentially very high. He might have a higher ceiling than some of these other guys. I don't know, but the uncertainty is wide.
The volatility is definitely wide. I think he is a future minded guy, and so I would like to see him develop the program. And so that's why I had him higher. I think on my list. Six. So I had, for the record, I had Satake at a 9, and he was my 7th ranked coach.
Yeah.
My 6 is also ranked 9 out of 15. I had Brent Venables at a 9. I think Venables is he's recruiting well.
I didn't mean to leave you hanging there. No, I just was confused about where I have my rankings. So number 6, we're at 6 now.
We are at number, yes, this is our 6th ranked coach.
Okay, that's where I have BV. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So I have Venables as a 9 out of 15. He's recruiting well. I think what happened last year, listen, they had some injuries, but also that was kind of a effing shambles. It was his first year. I think a lot of that can be attested to growing pains. I still think Brent Venables is a really good head coach, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I probably should have ranked him higher, but I have him at number 6. He is the one that I feel least confident about, and probably really the one that we have the least evidence of as a head coach. Obviously, fantastic defensive coordinator, but this is a very speculative placement on my part. Yeah,
I have Venables. Again, I haven't differentiated between these guys well, but I technically have him 3rd. He's tied for 3rd with 3 other coaches.
Okay.
At 11 points total. Okay. I think that he was instrumental in the maintenance of an excellent program at Clemson. And that encourages me that if anyone can come in and kind of stop the disaster at Oklahoma, he can. Last year, they clearly screwed up the quarterback room. That was the question going in, is like, if Dylan Gabriel can't play, what happens? And we saw it. It's really bad. They've got Jackson Arnold still coming in.
Yep.
Five star. The defense,
best player in the country. Yep.
You got to get some dudes out of there. Like, it's funny that we talked about Oklahoma getting Stoops' guys out of there forever. And now we're like, maybe they're going to get Alex Grinch's guys.
Lincoln Riley's guy.
And so I think they'll regress a little bit positively. They can run the triple option. They can do a lot of fun stuff. They're going to have better athletes than, you know, most of the people on their schedule. And I think that Venables, will normalize a little bit. So I like him as a, you know, upper middle class Big 12 coach there in that 11 point range. So I technically put him above Sarkisian, I have Steve Sarkisian at 4.
Right.
And so Venables is at 3 for me.
Gotcha. So who's your, my 4th and 5th are tied. Who's your number 5?
Okay. So I was at 6. I had Gus Malzahn. 5. Yep. I have Sonny Dykes.
Okay. I have him 4. For TCU. Yeah. I have him 4. Yep.
You know, Sonny Dykes, the TCU head coach.
I haven't seen his family, so I'm not sure. We look
very funny.
Sonny Dykes is a good head coach. Go ahead.
I think that Sonny Dykes, I think the uncertainty on Sonny Dykes is actually pretty high. I said this earlier this offseason, but like, you should be really wary making declarative statements about a coach after one season, right?
Yep.
Think about how far that could go, how poorly that could go. I mean, even a guy like Matt Rhule, who like went to the NFL and we clearly saw some limitations and thought like, okay, you can do it once, right? A lot of people can do it once. I think it's a completely fair criticism to say like Sonny Dykes did not build this team. And the team had clearly been more talented than it was performing the last couple of years before he came in and kind of took the governor off. And so I think that I talked all last season about the vibes. I'm not going to, you know, suddenly turn heel and say, actually the vibes are bad, but I think the vibes in Fort Worth are very good for the team and the players. And so I think that rates him highly. It's the sustainability aspect is what has me, has him in the upper middle class rather than the 1% for me is the idea that, he has to build a program that can compete week in and week out with, you know, Power Five competition, knowing at SMU, his teams did typically run out of gas. Yep. And so that's not to say that one of those is going to carry over, but it is going to say, if you've had trouble with that in the past, we need to see a little bit more. So like,
yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say that, I agree with you that his teams ran out of gas. I will say the counter argument to, he was doing it with Gary's players essentially, is that he did manage to recruit some freaking ballers to SMU, Rashi Rice and the transfer portal bringing in, ex Texas quarterback after ex Texas quarterback for however many years.
One man's trash.
Exactly. I am not high on TCU football this year. I do think that he has earned himself probably 5 years to mess around and build himself a program. And I do think he's a good vibes guy, despite the coordinator that he hired. So the reason I have him fourth is because I have seen him recruit well in the past and bring in stars. And that's the reason I have him ahead of my fifth, who is Dave Aranda. I think it's
okay. Yeah. We're getting messy here. We're diverging.
So you have Aranda first, don't you?
No.
Okay. Then I think we have the same first. That's fine. Yeah, I have Aranda fifth.
Cause we're sellouts. We're just going with the easy choice. Okay. I have Aranda second.
Okay. And I would listen to that. I have them both as a 10 out of 15, but please.
I have the Malzahn through Venables. That's Malzahn, Dykes, Sarkisian, Venables, 11 points. Mm-hmm. And then I have Aranda at 12. So he's just barely ahead of that.
Gotcha.
I think that's a little unfair because what I'm going to do is, in my mind, if I was filling out the rest of Baylor's power rating right now, I would pull them down in certain ways. Mm-hmm. That I know are reflective of what Aranda is doing. So I might not be getting all of the influence of Aranda. I might be overvaluing him a little bit here because I'm going to undervalue him in as it comes through the players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think he's a great recruiter, but I think the vibes are off the damn charts. And also, as a tactician, especially on defense, the man is a wizard. He manages to get people in the right positions. I putting him fifth is not an insult. I love Dave Aranda and I really want to hate him, out of my innate. I know this is a Big 12 podcast. I would like to dislike Dave Aranda. I can't do it. this is vibes. I like the guy. So,
extremely likable. And, I'm still of the opinion that he is surrounding himself with smart football people and he's not waiting to make changes. I think he made a clear misstep with the quarterback room, but has since ameliorated some of that. Mm-hmm. I think his comment the other day, I think was pretty transparently about he shouldn't have let Gary Bohannon and go. Yeah. And so, publicly wrestling that likable guy that really doesn't correlate a ton to winning football games, right? Like that's not,
sure.
I don't want to overvalue him, but because of that, but I will say in terms of culture, consistency, development, I think that he offers a lot that, maybe only Leipold really, and probably Climate at Kansas State can in terms of long build potential. I think.
And Mike Gundy, let's be honest. Listen, we don't have to like it. We don't have to like it. I'm telling you, Mike Gundy does that too. I'm just
Mike Gundy has done that in the past. I am agreeing with
you. All right. Well, okay. But not to trample over your point. Yes, Aranda is building something for the future.
But so sorry, what I think I got derailed on my end. because he's like fired what, three coordinators now, including Ron Roberts, his mentor. Mentor is a big word. I don't know that relationship. I just saw that someone said he was a mentor. They've been around each other a while. And so that to me speaks to an adaptability, but it might also have hints of desperation. I think it might be a little unfair for me to say that Matt Campbell is rearranging deck chairs by promoting within, and Dave Aranda is not rearranging deck chairs by bringing a guy back who was at Oregon last year, but is at Baylor a couple years in a row.
Yeah, no, that's, but I think the difference is that we've seen Campbell's ceiling, and it was during the COVID year. I don't think we've seen Aranda's ceiling at Baylor, even though they won the Big 12 a couple of years ago.
That was not a good, that was not a good team.
It wasn't a good team. They, and they went 12-2. You know what I mean? Like, I think there were
6-1 in one score games? 6-1.
Parker, I'm not arguing with you. I'm saying that I think Aranda still has more to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So I have Aranda at fifth. I have Dykes at fourth. Who's your fourth?
Sark.
Sark. Okay. And what do you rank him out of 15?
11. He's in that 11 tier.
Okay.
Yeah.
My third is Leipold. I have him at 11.
And who's your third? I have Venables.
Okay, we talked about him.
How many points do you have for Leipold?
11.
Okay, interesting.
What do you have for
Venables? Okay, we're gonna read these back at these because I'm
interested. No, we're reading them back, but we're working our way up.
I have Leipold at 10. Okay, that's cool.
Okay. Yeah. My second's Gundy. Your second was
Aranda.
You ranked him what?
12 out of 15.
12. Yep. Gundy's 12 for me. And then our number one, our Chris Kleiman.
Yep.
I have him at 14.
I have him at 13. So I'm just a little, you got to earn those last 2 points. I don't really give those to anybody.
What can we say?
I mean, I think that Kleiman has been around programs and like, so let's zoom out and start and say like, they won the Big 12 last year. They also looked terrible at times. They looked feckless. Ups and downs.
Injuries, I will say, played a part. Yeah. They were banged
injuries
up.
Played a part. Yep. And but again, part of that is like everybody deals with that.
Sure, sure. They also had a 5-6 running back. So
right, and they're going to be worse this year. You get worse when you lose your best players, and they're going to lose like 5 or 6 guys in the NFL. You're going to get worse. But from a program building standpoint, I don't know anybody else in the league has the ceiling that Kleiman has to develop and sustain. Because that was the thing at North Dakota State, which he did, I think, 1.5 cycles there. But the idea in the Big 12 is kind of the circle of life of you're new, you do well with the new crew, you're bad for a couple of years, and either you move on either you move on when you're good or you're bad for a couple of years and kind of cycle upwards. I think Kleiman could have the highest floor out of anybody easily in that cycle. Yep. So as all these Big 12 teams are doing that cycle of development of decent, maybe good drop off, I think his drop off is higher than anyone else. And so while they may not be able to recruit the amount of talent, I think he's recruiting the right kind of talent consistently, recruiting players that want to be there, and he can develop them for 4 years. And put together a really, really solid team. So I'm very high again. Again, he's only 2 points higher. I know people are going to listen to this and, you know, say whatever, but like, he's only 2 points higher than Gus Malzahn, who is my sixth best coach. So like, it's the margins are very thin, especially right now. But like, I think he's earned that extra point.
Okay. I would say that I completely agree with you. His floor is the highest, which is why I have him the highest rated coach. I also think the vibes are off the charts. Don't know anybody that doesn't love Chris Kleiman. And I will say I love the offense that he runs. I think it's perfect for the type of players that go to Kansas State. He does weird shit, but it's weird shit within like this ethos of also we're going to be like a grit monster FU football team. I love Chris Kleiman. Okay, Parker, let's recap this. So here's what I want to do. You go, then I'll go. Go 1 to 14 and say, rank them. So rank them and then say your score out of 15 for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first.
Yep. It's all you, buddy.
Starting at the top. So we're going back down the ladder.
That's great.
Okay. Chris Kleiman, 13 points. Number two is Baylor, 12, or DeVaranda, 12 points. Number three, Brent Venables, 11. Number four, Steve Sarkisian, 11. Number five, Sonny Dykes, 11. Number six, Gus Malzahn, 11. Number seven, Lance Leipold, 10. Number eight, Matt Campbell, 10. Number nine, Joey McGuire, 10. Number 10, Kalani Sitake, 10. Mike Gundy, 9, is at 11. 12th is Dana Holgorsen at 9 points. 13th, Neil Brown, 8 points. And 14th, Scott Satterfield at 7 points out of a possible 15.
Gotcha. I have Chris Kleiman first at 14. I have Mike Gundy second at 12. Lance Leipold third at 11. Sonny Dykes at 10. In fourth place, at fifth place, I have Dave Aranda tied with Sonny at 10. Brent Venables at 9 in sixth. Kalani Sitake also with 9 at 7th. Matt Campbell, 8th in 8th place. Joe McGuire in 9th place with 7. Dana Holgorsen in 10th place with 7. Steve Sarkisian in 11th place with 7. Gus Malzahn in 12th place with 7. A large jump down to Scott Satterfield in 13th with 4 points. And in last place, Neil Brown with 3. Those are your, we would love, for the record, public comment on this. Please tell us that we're idiots. But I also want to challenge our listeners.
It's
going to
be pretty, but tomorrow I'm going to put ours up on the Twitter. Yeah. And so maybe you guys can post yours and we can talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I challenge our listeners to send us your rankings. I'm very curious. I'm an idiot. I'll put that out there. I did think about this for quite a while, and I think I'm happy with my point values and my rankings. So excited to see you.
And I think it's a good exercise to make you like actually commit to something. You know, you talk about people like bitch about the college football playoff, and you're like, dude, why don't you just write down your top 25 teams? And then it gets hard. Not to say that they're right. I think they're wrong in a lot of ways, but you should write down your own. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
Follow along the whole year. Like I said, we'll be doing this as a, like metric.
I mean, literally every Sunday night we're going to review these. So
yeah. So perfect. Parker, I think we accomplished everything we had on our agenda, which was one thing.
That's pretty impressive.
I know,
for us to only have one thing on our agenda and to accomplish it without, you know, offending anyone or.
Well, the jury's
getting canceled.
Parker, what is the one song that has been stuck in your head? Let's get on that.
No, I already said that. I did the shout out to Stick Season.
That's right.
You'll listen to it tonight.
Yep.
It's mine so is, dang catchy.
Mine is The Muse by the Wood Brothers. I was singing it at a wedding reception. So.
I love that because you listened to them because you were going to their concert and then like went to their concert and then have been like, hey, I've been like listening to them.
Like on second thought, like, cool, no, feeling. This song freaking rips.
That's a cool
feeling. My God, it's so good. You are Parker Fleming. This has been the Purple Theory Podcast. You can find Parker Fleming at Stats of War on Twitter. He is on the BetUS show. Are y'all still?
We'll pick it up this summer or something.
Pick it up this summer. Perfect. He is also at Tuma Sports. Stuff. He's doing a bunch of different shit. Go follow Stats of War. You'll pick up on a lot of things. I'm Grant McGalliard. I'm at Grant McGalliard on Twitter, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. We are the Purple Theory Podcast. We are the nation's premier, the only. I'm not stealing that bit from the shutdown forecast. We are the nation's premier Big 12 podcast, and we will be back with you next Wednesday. We have a couple guests lined up that we're really excited about, and we have some news. So stay tuned for that. Other than that, thank you for listening. Send us your Big 12 coach rundowns, and we will see you next week. Adios.